This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Antik. May is Better Hearing and Speech Month, and I have a full house in the studio with me today to talk about hearing loss in mainstream education. Saravanan Sulandure is an audiologist. Dr. Bashir Abdul Fadi Othman is a speech-language pathologist who specializes in pediatric hearing loss, and giving the parents' perspective is Noziba Ghani. Her son wears cochlear implant and attends a mainstream school. Sara, if I can begin with you, what is hearing loss?
Hearing loss is basically the inability to hear softer sounds, right? So we have to define normal hearing first. For all of us, we can hear sounds in various pitch, low pitch, mid pitch, and high pitch. And we can hear as soft as whispers, as soft as trees, leaves rustling, and things like that. So once you have a hearing loss, you start to lose the ability to hear softer sounds. And as the hearing loss worsens, you start to hear less and less sounds, right? So usually audiologists and medical field define hearing loss in different degrees and different types. Mm-hmm. So with different degrees, you have mild hearing loss, moderate, severe, and profound. With mild and moderate hearing loss, a child will still be able to hear speech, but it wouldn't be clear and it would be quite soft, so they have to pay a lot of attention. And they can't hear when the person who's speaking to them is very far away, right? With severe and profound, they can't hear even when we shout to them. So they can't do without devices. Mm-hmm. But usually in schools, there's more of the mild and moderate hearing loss that we're missing.
And how many types are there?
For types of hearing loss, you have conductive hearing loss, which means there's a blockage on the pathway of the ear towards the inner ear. So you could have something blocking the outer ear, like a earwax blockage and things like that. Or a middle ear problem. Behind the eardrum, you could have fluid blockage. You could have something that's causing the bones of the middle ear to be fixated and things like that. And you have the sensory neural hearing loss, which is usually a lack of sensitivity in the inner ear, right? And you could have a mix of both of these happening at the same time. In school children, the prevalent or the highly common condition is the middle ear problems, and it fluctuates. So sometimes they hear very clear, and sometimes they have a problem hearing teacher speaking.
Dr. Bashir, if I can come to you, do we know or have data of how many kids in mainstream education today are affected by some form of hearing loss?
We actually don't. That's a short answer. But generally, there is about 3 to 4 kids in every 1,000 live birth who are affected by significant hearing loss. When I say significant, meaning without any intervention, without being optimally fitted with device, either hearing aids or cochlear implants, they won't develop language, speech and language. So 3 to 4 children out of 1,000 live births. So put that into the perspective of how many live births are there in a day in Malaysia. We have many. So that's roughly how I can estimate.
And this 3 to 4 encompasses the whole degree and types of kids who suffer from hearing loss.
In addition to the figure is, are those kids who have acquired hearing loss when they go to school, or those who are born hearing, but due to some genetic default or whatever, they have progressive hearing loss. So the hearing loss is only expressed, or you can only realize that there's hearing loss when they are in school.
Ziba, so I mentioned in the introduction that your son wears a cochlear implant currently in school. Tell us a little bit about him and what is his diagnosis?
Okay, he is now 14 years old. So back in 2006, when he was 1 year and a half, he said nothing. He just babbled ba and wa, that's all. He didn't call me mama. He didn't have any words. So I took him to the first doctor. The doctor said that he is just a late talker. And then I came back to my house, and then I feel worried. So I took him to see the second doctor, who also said late talker. I took him to the third doctor, who said he is late talker. It's only the fourth doctor who suspected that he had hearing loss. So he was referred for a hearing test. So the we went for the hearing test, and the result came back that he suffered from severe to profound bilateral sensory neural hearing loss.
Wow, that's a mouth. What does that mean, if you can, okay. I can get you to unpack that?
Bilateral means both ears are affected with severe to profound hearing loss, and it's sensory neural, meaning that it's permanent, it's not reversible.
Okay. Mm. So during that 1.5 years, were there any signs that was he not responding to any of your call towards him? Or his name, for example?
We called him. Sometimes he respond. He look at us, sometimes not. So I thought it's just maybe he's not pay attention to what we said. But actually, I think he was being very alert. So he always check if there are people called him or not.
Sarah, and in Ziba's son's case, it's from birth. What are the causes of hearing loss?
So if we look at causes of hearing loss, of course, a child that's born with hearing loss, that, like Dr. Basha was saying, 3 to 4 out of 1,000 live births do have inborn hearing loss, right? Then you have acquired hearing loss due to infections, either during when the child is in the womb itself while being given birth to, and during the neonate period, they could have jaundice, bad infections, and things that could cause hearing loss in that sense. And there's progressive hearing loss as well. Like with age, we know that we lose hearing, and that's due to some biological thing that goes in us that tells our hearing cells to shut down. And this could happen earlier. So in a child, it might start as soon as they're born, and the process is accelerated. So by the time the child is 2 or 3 years old, they might have been hearing at birth, and they have been responding to sounds and things like that. But by the time they reach 3 to 4 years old, they can't hear anything at all. Right. So this is a reason why you should have newborn hearing screening, but as well as that, you should have a periodic screening of hearing. And before the child goes into primary school at 6 years old, you should have another round of hearing screenings done. Like in Ziba's case, right, 3 doctors actually told there's nothing wrong with the child, it's just a late talker. So imagine this. That's why we're having children being diagnosed with inborn hearing loss, being diagnosed only at 2 to 3 years old. By right, by 6 months, they should have been diagnosed. By 1 year, we should have intervened already, right? So there is a significant delay that's happening right now in our country.
And when you say periodic, after the 6, if, for example, the 6 months goes undetected, 1 year goes undetected, how often should you go for this screening?
Well, the recommended is usually at birth, right? And after that, just before they go to school. So that's 5 to 6 years old. In between, usually parents are looking out for signs and symptoms. If the child suddenly is not responding to sounds, is not turning when the name is being called, then they should have a hearing test done. When there's a suspicion that the child is not speaking well, when the child is not developing speech at his age level, the first thing that you need to do is refer for a hearing test. It's a simple procedure, non-invasive, can be done within a day, and we can have conclusive results at the end. So there's no reason for us to not to do it.
And so you're an audiologist, Dr. Basha, you're a speech-language pathologist. Tell me a little bit about how the work you do overlap or differ from each other. Maybe, Sarah, we'll start with you first, and then okay. We'll go to Dr. Basha.
So an audiologist basically looks at hearing loss. So we detect or diagnose a hearing loss, and then we manage the hearing loss in terms of referrals to medical doctors if there's something that can be corrected. Usually, conductive hearing loss can be corrected. Or if it's a permanent hearing loss, sensory neural hearing loss most of the times, we manage based on devices, whether it's a hearing aid or in severe to profound cases, a cochlear implant. So to ensure that the device is giving sufficient amplification, so the child is hearing almost everything that a normal hearing child of the same age can hear. Right, so that's what, in a very compact manner, what an audiologist does. Yeah.
And taking on from that, that's a nice thing to segue me into what we do as an SL speech and language pathologist. I will be speaking just in terms of speech language pathologists like me who work with children with hearing loss to develop their spoken language. For those who work with children to acquire sign language or cute speech, I'm sorry, I can't speak for them. So while Sarah is working with getting the diagnosis right, getting the fitting of hearing aids right, optimal, he would alert me and say, Basha, we have a child with hearing loss. I think it's time you come in. And we should come in even before the hearing aids are fitted so that the parents are prepped about what's in store for them. Because the real difference when you want the child to develop spoken language through listening is that we listen with we hear with the ears, we listen with the brain. It's the brain that does the work. You can wear the most expensive hearing aids or get the best cochlear implant, but if there's no training of the brain in terms of listen, this is that sound, this is this sound, and I'm speaking to you in all your waking hours, the most expensive device doesn't do its work. So who does this work? People said the therapist. The answer is yes and no. The therapist does the work with the parents, probably about 1 hour per week at most. The rest of the time, the parents do the work. So they are expected to keep giving language stimulation to the child so that the child will hear all these beautiful sounds in their surrounding and their brain get trained to listen to all these sounds and all the speech in their native language, and that's how they're developed. And because that's how we learn language and we take it for granted because we don't have hearing loss. Yeah. So as a speech language pathologist, I train the parents with specific techniques, how to modulate their voice, what are the words to teach at this level and how to change that to the next level in the next 3 months. And they have to keep changing this, and they also have to learn how to advocate for their child. So it's not just about listening and speaking. It's about teaching their child to have good self-esteem, to be strong, to defend themselves, to advocate for themselves, like what Ziba is currently doing, and we'll hear more from her later. So I guess, Sarah, in terms of having the more frequency of seeing the child, I would say I would see a lot more than Sarah. And the relationship that I have with families are special and unique because they're like part of my family and I'm part of their family.
Yeah, it's like hardware and software.
Yeah.
It's not just good enough to have a good hardware.
Exactly.
We'll come back more and talk about how Ziba and her son interacts with an audiologist and a speech-language pathologist, because all sorts of implications for cost as well as getting the child ready for a mainstream school setting. It's Better Hearing and Speech Month, so we're taking this opportunity to shed more light on the impact of hearing loss to learning in mainstream schools. We'll take a short break. More after this. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Antik. May is Better Hearing and Speech Month. We're talking about mainstreaming children with hearing loss in our schools. My guests today are audiologists Saravanan Salandure, Noor Ziba Ghani, a mother of a 14-year-old boy currently enrolled in a mainstream school, and speech-language pathologist Dr. Bashira Tufadi Othman. Dr. Bashira supports families of kids with hearing loss to advocate for the inclusion of their children in mainstream education and society. Dr. Bashira, we're working towards full inclusion, but at the moment, what schooling options do children have, children with hearing loss have?
Okay, on a general scale, their school options depends on the mode of communications. If a child with hearing loss are trained using sign language, by default, they go to signing schools. That is a given. But most of the parents that I work with, they are hearing parents, and understandably, they want their kids to be listening and speaking, not signing. A very small majority want their children, want their kids to sign, and that's their choice, and I respect that. So signing kids goes to signing school. There are some who go to cute speech as well, Sekolah Pertuturan Q. However, there's only one Sekolah Pertuturan Q in the entire country, in Kampung Pandan.
What is cute speech?
Cute speech is you use spoken language like we do, but every syllable is cued. And they have different Q. It's not a sign. It's Q for different Q for consonants, different place between your mouth and your neck for vowels. So it helps other kids who also use cute speech to understand what is being spoken. It's a combination between using spoken language and enhancing lip reading in a way. But there's only one school, and they don't have secondary school. So once they finish their Jahannam, they need to go somewhere. And the third option is, of course, those who are speaking and listening. which by default I advocate for going into full inclusion, mainstream school, sitting with hearing classmates who are typically developing and typically hearing. However, going into a more specific options from the Kementerian Pendidikan under Pendidikan Khas, there are three options. The first one is Pendidikan Khas Masalah Pendengaran, so SKPK, Masalah Pendengaran, they call it. The mode of communication is signing. Although I should say that they use signing and speaking, so it's Bahasa Malaysia Kod Tangan or Kod Tangan Bahasa Malaysia. So while they sign, they would also speak. And the second option is Pendidikan Khas Integrasi. Integrasi meaning there is a special class in a mainstream school. Integrated in that way, like physically there's a special class in a mainstream school, but that special class also uses sign language and using the same curriculum that the Pendidikan Khas school uses. Right.
Which is different from mainstream.
Different from mainstream. Okay. So pretty much, even though they are in a mainstream school, they have their own signing friends. Sometimes they have different recess time. Sometimes they have different resource room, library and all that. Physically they are together, but I don't think they're really together. With all due respect to Ministry of Education, I don't think they are together. And the third option is inclusive, full inclusion, meaning that they sit, like what Tufail Zibasan is going through, with hearing peers in mainstream school, with hearing classmates. And that is what we want to go for. But to go through that, there are several things that they have to go through first to make sure that the door that they knock, the door that the parents knock, will be open for their child to be in this inclusion system.
Ziba, a range of options there. Walk me through your thought process and consideration. Why? How did you come to decide to place your son in a mainstream school?
Okay, this all goes back to what I decided when we first fitted him with hearing aids. So thanks to internet, so I Google what are the options available to hearing loss kids like Tufail. So I found that these kids are able to develop spoken language, to listen and develop spoken language and be in mainstream class, mainstream school. So I really want my son to be in mainstream society because we are all the family. We are all hearing parents, hearing people. So I think I'm giving Tufail a tool to be able to communicate with us hearing people. So I invested a lot, my time, my energy, money to to make sure that he developed spoken language. So just like Dr. Basha said, that we really have to give language, we really have to speak to him. So it is just right if I put him in the mainstream school, mainstream class, because he will also get a lot of language from his peers, from his teachers, and then he get a lot of opportunities to interact with peers and the teachers. So that is the first reason, because I want him to further develop his spoken language, his language. And then the second one is for the self-esteem. I cannot isolate him from mainstream society. So he will always be in mainstream society. So it is very important for him to feel that it's okay to be different. So he can only do that if he is in mainstream school, because he will be different from others. So when he was small, I fitted him with red hearing aids, blue hearing aids. I purposely want to invite stares and questions because it's opportunities for me to teach, to model to him how to respond to it. So when he goes to primary schools, he has the opportunities to practice it because there are peers who ask him, why did he use hearing aids? So he has to say that because I could not hear, so I have to use hearing aids. And he must be... And I'm happy, I think, because he is... Until now, he is teenagers, he's in secondary school. He is okay to be different. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the third one is because he has to advocate for himself because he has hearing loss. He needs some accommodation. Sometimes he could not understand the teachers, so he has to ask the teachers to repeat to him. So I have done the advocacy for him for when he was small and when he was in primary school. Now I have to pass the baton to him that he has to advocate for himself. So he has to do it in the mainstream school, because if he is in special school, maybe he doesn't have to advocate for himself because people know what he needs. But being in mainstream school, he has to do that for himself.
Oh, that's inspiring. But as a parent, do you have peers or other parents that were in your shoes who you could look to as like for a support system, or like is this largely a process where you had to go through alone?
Because it was in 2006, so I didn't really meet any parents. I really truly depends on the internet. So I actually contacted a lot of professionals and parents in overseas. But it's really feel like really lonely. But I'm glad that today we have a group. It's called Hear Me, Persatuan for Parents with Hearing Impaired Children. So they can we have a group of parents that we can share problems, we can share stories, we can share tips to help each other. So I am thankful that the new parents have support from veteran parents like us.
Sarah, I think you mentioned earlier that with proper fitting of a hearing device or intervening at the appropriate stage, you can restore hearing or at least the sound to almost full capacity. Is that right? Even in full deafness, with the proper hardware, the child, the person is able to hear sound as a typically hearing person.
Okay. So the goal for an audiologist when fitting a device, whether it's a hearing aid or a cochlear implant or any other device, is to bring back the ability to hear speech sounds at very, very soft levels, almost similar to a normal hearing person. Right. Of course, there's slight loss in terms of quality and things like that. But the children that I work with and that I've seen being implanted very early on, these children without the device are profoundly deaf. That means a jet plane could go by them and they wouldn't even blink an eye. Right. But these children, when they are fitted with a cochlear implant, they hear without even looking at you. They hear every single sound, speech that the parents are speaking to them, and they can respond just like any other kid. Do not have to turn their head, do not have to face you, and they hear all these things. And this is the opportunity that we try to give to every child, right? But there's a few things there. First, an appropriately fitted device. Second, that device must be working in full capacity at all the time. I work in a hospital, so probably the parents can bring the child to see an audiologist in a hospital at most once a week or once a month, right? But sometimes these devices fail to work in the school, and the child goes without hearing in the school, in the classroom. So this is where we need audiologists, and if not audiologists, technicians at the least, to be in the schools themselves. Right now, we do have some audiologists that are trained, and they are placed in the Pendidikan Khas, the special needs section of schools. But mainstream school has lots and lots of children with hearing loss. And these children basically are dependent on themselves and their parents. So we, as a society, need to support them there. Mm. Right? So we can give them the hardware. We can make sure that it works. Then they can hear just like any other child. And they will develop speech. They will learn. And they will be part of the society. And we cannot differentiate them from any of us.
Dr. Basha, what kinds of support do children need children with hearing loss need in schools?
When we talk about support in school, the first thing is that the teachers and the school systems have to understand what these kids with hearing loss need. Among the things that they need, I think Sarah could help me to add on, classroom acoustics. If the class has more than 40 kids, which is the common, that's the norm in Malaysian Sekolah Kebangsaan, right? In Chinese schools, that's even more. That is a very, very noisy environment. I've had kids who tell me that the moment the friend next to him pushed the chair backwards and the legs just scraped the floor, he would just lost attention. He would stop paying attention to the teacher and got annoyed and distracted by that scraping sound. So that sort of thing, that for people to understand what are the things that would distract the kids. People who do not understand hearing loss would say, we had a teacher who said, but I use a microphone. And he still couldn't hear me. You can use a microphone or a loudspeaker right next into his implant and he still couldn't hear you if you don't know how to speak clearly with the right speech rate to the child. So all this awareness about how to interact with children with hearing loss, where to sit them in class, that is the sort of things that are very important, and that is why we need audiology and speech-language pathology services, not just in special schools, but also in mainstream schools.
Ziba, how soon did you and your son started working with pathologists and audiologists?
After diagnosis, in 1 week, we quickly fitted him with hearing aids. And at that time, I was in Kuantan. We didn't have any speech therapies. I think maybe 3 months later, then I met a speech therapy. And we worked for maybe like 10 sessions. And then due to some reason, because I have to travel from Kuantan to KL by bus. Yeah, and go back to Kuantan, and went back to Kuantan. So, and then I found it, it's not, maybe it's best for me to learn by myself and stay home. So I did the work all by myself, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I resigned from my job just to focus on him.
Wow. So because you were so involved and because your son have that kind of intervention and support, in school, was there still hearing challenges he has to overcome, or was it more of, like you mentioned earlier, him trying to correct perception of his peers having of him with that hearing device on?
Oh, okay. So now he is 14. He is in Form 2 at SMK Putrajaya Precinct 16. I have to mention that because they have been very supportive. I'll tell the challenges after this later. So now, like, the teacher, he is expected to do things like other peers. He has to present in front of the class. He even volunteered himself to speak in front of others. I saw him socializing with kids, with the other students outside of outside of his classroom. So the social circles widened. When I put him at that school, the counselor, he told me that the counselor wanted to meet me. So I went, and then the counselor said that the school really wants to support my son in the school. So if he had any problem, I can always contact the counselor. I think that is really helpful. So I really thank the school, and I really think that the school should receive recognition for supporting children like Tufail to be inclusive in the school, the classroom. Okay, that is secondary school. I had so many challenges when he was in primary school, and I think that should not be the case because that is the first experience they are in the school. They should have positive experience, but for Tufail, it was not so positive. So when he was in standard one, in year one, I was called by the headmaster and asked to transfer him to special school. So I asked, have you looked at his progress, his achievements? No. Have you ever seen my son? No. So he just made that decision based on knowing that my son is OKU. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that is fair.
Right.
So, and then the school said, the Guru Besar said that we don't have the expertise, and then we don't want to treat any kids special. I don't think putting kids in front, hearing impact kids in front of the class is a special treatment. It is something that need to be done. If he is already challenged to listen, when you put him at the back of the class, I don't think it's helpful at all. Yeah. So that's one. And then he's being bullied and people tease him. Like, if people tease him, he like, hey, pekak, I call him deaf. He would say, yes, I'm pekak. Do you have any problem with it? I'm fine with that. But I always ask the sister to go and warn that boy.
Yeah.
But then bullying, like hitting, that is when the time I went down to school to talk about it. And then there's also, I think there was also double treatment, double standard treatment he received from the teachers. There's one occasion where there are some students, including my son, who cannot read something, so they have to line up outside of the class. And then the teacher hit everyone with a book on his head, on their head. And then when it to Fire's turn, she hit him twice and then pulled his head and banged him to the wall. I don't know why he did. I think that is not fair, because if she did it to all the kids, that's fine, but why only my son?
It's still not fine for a teacher to do that.
Oh, yeah, okay. True. It's still not fine.
Yeah, I think guidelines have already been written very explicitly that any form of physical or corporal punishment is not all right.
Yeah, but because he has limited language that time, maybe she think that he wouldn't say it to me, but he did actually inform me, and at the same time, my daughter saw it. Yeah. So that is really the most painful event I had during his schooling time. Yeah. And then, things like asking him to be in front of the class, no one listened to it, no one wants to to allow him to sit in front of the class. And then I bought a FM system. It's a system that helped him to listen clearly in the class, despite the noise in the class. That is also not being received well by the teacher. So it's the FM system that we spend about 7,000 to 8,000. It's like a white elephant. Yeah.
Tell me again, what does a FM system do?
FM system is like the teacher will speak and it goes into the microphone and it will go directly to the hearing student's ear.
Right. Yeah. Hearing aids.
It's a wireless system.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Sarah, is it expensive for hearing devices? Does it cost a lot? If you are on the more severe end of the degree, does it cost more?
For hearing devices, hearing aids are cheaper. Cochlear implants, being a surgical procedure where you have to insert biocompatible devices into the inner ear, those are more expensive to begin with, right? So for hearing aids, you have a range as well. For a pair of hearing aids, it can be as low as about 4,000 ringgit and can be as expensive as about 20,000 ringgit for a pair. And for a cochlear implant, to begin with, it could be anything between 85,000 ringgit all the way up to about 120,000 ringgit for one side, right? So yes, they are expensive because of the technology that goes into them. But if we look at the cost overall in the long term, like if you take a hearing aid, right, and we say a pair costs about 10,000 ringgit, and that hearing aid lasts for about 5 years, and the child uses it all the day, throughout the day, from the time they're awake to the time that they're sleeping, right? So the cost per day is actually not so expensive for a device that is so extensively used, right? So yes, the impression of society is that devices are expensive, but what they do for the child, right, that actually overcomes a lot of things. And it's my personal belief that every single child should be given free devices, but yeah, that's just me.
Dr. Basha, can we achieve that, free devices for all kids who need it?
Well, I don't see whether that will be happening in the near future, really. Because if you look at MOH level, because this will be under the jurisdiction of Minister of Health, they will say that hearing loss is just one small portion of disabilities that they need to cater to. There are other disabilities as well, and the resources are so small, and the sections of the pie are so big. But I am optimistic, because previously, funding for cochlear implants, for example, are just so hard to find. This was way back in 2001 when I started working. But nowadays, there are still not enough, but they're much more available. So we are moving in a slow rate, yes, but we are moving, and that's all I can hope for.
Ziba, would you have a final message for what you like to see improve in schools or parents who have with a kid who has hearing loss?
I think schools are afraid to accept hearing loss students because first, they think they don't know how to handle them, how to teach them, and they are afraid that they will be held accountable for the educational outcome for the students. And the second one, they afraid that they have less time to attend to normal children. But I think the attitude would be more positive if they receive training so that they understand the situation, the condition of the students, the special needs student, and also learn some strategies to help the students. And I think it's very high time for Ministry of Education to place speech therapists in school. It is very important. Parents really need it. I really hope they hear me.
An audiologist.
Yeah, an audiologist, yeah. Because then the teachers will be supported. They will be able to receive the students more positive because they know they are being supported by the speech therapist. If they have problems, they can tell the speech therapist. The speech therapist can work with that students. And then it's also helpful for the school to educate the other students in the school to accept the children, the special needs children, so there's no bullying, so the positive experience of schooling that student can enjoy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then for the parents, I think if they want, they can contact another parents through Hear Me Group, Satuan Ibu Bapa Anak Masalah Pendengaran. They can go to Facebook and search for Hear Me Malaysia, so they can get a lot of resources from there, from the other parents there.
Ziba, thank you so much for coming today and sharing your experience and your son Tufal as well.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Saravanan Selanduri, audiologist, was here as well. Dr. Bashara Tufali Othman, speech-language pathologist. Thank you all very much for coming today.
You're welcome.
If you miss any part of this interview, you can download the podcast via our BFM app available on Google Play or Apple App Store. Thank you for listening. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.